All right, let's dive in. Back to 586 BC.
Oh, wow.
To the Book of Lamentations, verses 1 through 11 of chapter 1.
All right.
Picture Jerusalem in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once a bustling city, now just ruins.
Right.
After the Babylonians took over.
Wow.
And the people of Judah are dealing with this incredible loss.
Yeah.
Their homes, their temple,
right.
Their whole way of life.
Yeah.
We're going to be using a lecture by Dr. Leslie Allen to help guide us today.
Interesting.
You know what's really fascinating about this text?
What's that?
It's not just like a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Allen actually sees it as like a guided process of grieving. Using these familiar Judean traditions to help people cope with this horrible event.
I see. Like a communal way of processing, right?
Yeah. It's like a therapy session.
Uh-huh.
Led by this wise mentor.
I like that.
Dr. Allen actually mentions a book by Gerald Sitzer called A Grace Disguised.
Okay.
And in it, Sitzer compares facing grief to walking into darkness to find the sunrise.
Mm.
Sounds kind of counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, but interesting.
But powerful.
Definitely.
And that idea really fits with what we're doing today, don't you think?
It does.
How does this ancient text help guide us through the darkness of loss?
You're right.
Toward maybe a little bit of hope.
And Dr. Allen actually points out something really cool.
What's that?
He identifies three emotional trajectories that keep coming up in the text.
Okay.
Guilt,
mm-hmm.
grief,
mm-hmm.
and grievance.
Got it.
But he says they don't follow a logical order.
They don't.
No, they jump back and forth.
So it's like all mixed up.
Exactly. Reflecting the chaotic nature of grief.
That makes total sense.
Right.
Grief isn't a straight line.
No.
It's more like running west.
Okay.
Desperately chasing a setting sun.
I see.
But then realizing that the path to light is actually east.
Yeah.
Into the darkness.
Uh-huh.
You ever felt like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Stuck in this cycle of emotions.
Yeah.
Not knowing which way to go.
I think we all have.
And the text acknowledges that complexity.
Right.
And it uses some pretty striking literary devices.
Oh, yeah.
To express all that turmoil.
Like what?
Like the acrostic structure.
Mm-hmm.
Where each of the 22 verses corresponds to a letter.
Okay.
In the Hebrew alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
It creates this sense of wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
Like every bit of grief is being carefully examined.
So the structure itself is conveying this idea of completeness.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
It's like the text is saying, we're going to explore every single corner of this experience.
Yeah.
And there's the limping meter.
What's that?
It's this rhythm. Three accented syllables followed by two.
Interesting.
It was often used in these funeral laments. You could almost feel the weight of sorrow.
Uh-huh.
And that uneven rhythm.
I'm picturing a slow procession as this is being recited.
You can almost hear those heavy steps.
Yeah.
The weight of the mourner's hearts.
Exactly.
And then there's the repetition of the word eka, meaning how or alas.
Right.
It emphasizes those raw emotional cries woven into the poetry.
It's like the text itself is giving voice.
It is.
To the pain of the people.
Exactly.
Now, one of the most thought-provoking things about this text, as Dr. Allen points out, is that it challenges Zion theology.
What's that?
It was this unshakable belief that God would always protect Jerusalem.
Oh, wow.
But of course, Jerusalem falls.
It does.
And so it forces a confrontation.
With it.
What happens when our deepest beliefs are shattered?
It's not just about the city being destroyed.
No.
It's about a whole belief system being destroyed.
Exactly.
And that can be even more devastating.
Definitely. And what's so interesting here is that the text doesn't shy away from that conflict.
Really?
Yeah. It presents this theological crisis head on.
Huh.
Makes the audience grapple with what it all means.
It makes you wonder, what happens when the foundation of your faith crumbles?
Right.
Do you rebuild on the same ground?
Yeah.
Or do you find a new foundation?
That's a good question.
And how does that apply to us today?
Mm-hmm.
We might not face the destruction of a whole city.
Right.
But we all have situations that shake our core beliefs.
Absolutely.
And this text might actually offer some guidance on how to handle those moments.
Definitely.
Now, let's talk about what was actually lost.
Okay.
This is a society where communal identity was everything.
Mm-hmm.
So those losses described in the first few verses, the loss of political allies, the exile of fellow Judeans, those wouldn't just be individual tragedies, right?
No. They'd be felt by the entire community.
Right. And the text emphasizes that.
How?
With the word lonely. Dr. Allen points out how this word is all over the text.
Mm-hmm. Setting the stage for this profound sense of social and communal loss.
Uh-huh.
Even Jerusalem itself is personified as a widowed woman.
Oh, wow.
Alone and vulnerable.
So it's not just a physical loss.
No.
It's a loss of connection.
Yeah.
Of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Of identity.
Right.
It's that awful feeling of being completely isolated.
Yeah.
And abandoned.
And that feeling is made even more real with specific details.
Oh, like what?
Like the text describing the roads to Zion mourning because no one comes to the festivals.
Oh, wow.
It paints a picture of this once thriving city.
Yeah.
Now deserted and desolate.
So even the roads are grieving.
Yes.
The ones that used to be packed with pilgrims.
Exactly. They're now grieving the absence of life.
Yeah.
And celebration.
We also see the city gates.
Yes.
Desolate.
The priests who once led those vibrant ceremonies now just groaning in despair.
And what about the young girls?
Yes.
The ones who used to dance and play music during religious processions.
Right.
They're now mourning the loss of those roles.
Yeah.
And those connections to their faith and community.
Imagine the joy they used to have.
It's hard to think about.
Now replaced with sorrow.
Yeah.
And silence.
It's heartbreaking. But this loss wasn't just limited to religion, was it?
No, it wasn't. The text also talks about the loss of the monarchy.
Oh, right.
Verse 6 speaks of the majesty departing from daughter Zion.
Okay.
Signifying the fall of the Davidic dynasty.
So that's a huge loss.
Yes. Not just politically.
But symbolically, too.
Exactly.
It's like losing the core of their national identity.
Right.
Their line of kings going all the way back to King David.
And Dr. Allen uses this powerful image.
What is it?
To describe it. He says the royal officials are fleeing like stags. Without a pasture.
Oh, wow.
Stripped of their power and position.
So this isn't just a political shakeup.
No.
It's like a complete dismantling.
Exactly.
Of their whole socialcyarchy.
They've lost their leaders, their sense of order, their connection to this proud lineage.
And that brings us to the next part of the text.
Okay.
Which focuses on the material losses.
Right.
Now, it's easy to dismiss those.
Oh, yeah.
As secondary.
Okay.
To losing lives and land.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet you're going to tell me it's not that simple.
You bet I am. The loss of possessions can be really impactful, too.
I knew it.
And Dr. Allen makes a good argument for that.
Okay.
This is our possessions can become like extensions of ourselves.
Oh, interesting.
Filled with memories and emotions.
Uh-huh.
And losing them
can
feel like a violation.
Oh, wow.
Like a part of your identity has been ripped away.
Like if someone steals a family heirloom.
Right.
It's not just about the thing itself.
No.
It's the history.
Yeah.
The memories,
mm-hmm.
that connection to the past that's gone.
Exactly. And the text emphasizes this.
Does it?
Yeah. By using the word precious over and over.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I'm talking about what was lost.
So it's not just about money then?
No, not at all. It's about how important those things were to them emotionally.
And then you have this image of people trading those precious things just for food.
I know.
Just to survive.
So desperate.
It really shows you how bad things were.
Yeah, the desperation and the humiliation they faced.
It makes you think about what we truly value and what would it be like to lose it all.
It forces us to confront our own attachments.
Yeah, and our own vulnerabilities.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the middle of all this despair, something changes.
Oh.
In the text.
Okay.
In verses 9 and 11, we hear Zion's voice.
Oh, wow.
She's talking directly to God.
In prayer.
Yeah. It's a big moment.
It is.
She's not just lamenting anymore. She's asking for God to intervene.
Right. Like, okay, I've poured out my grief, acknowledged the devastation.
Right.
Now, God, I need you to act.
And her words are so raw.
Aren't they?
Full of emotion.
She talks about her affliction,
her
feelings of worthlessness, and even acknowledges that the enemy won.
There's just this vulnerability there.
Yes.
A sense of desperation.
Definitely. But also a little defiance.
Oh, how so?
She's not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
She's appealing to a higher power for justice.
One line that really got to me was, "Look and see how worthless I have become."
Powerful, right.
Just so vulnerable and full of despair.
It is, but Dr. Allen also points out another layer to this more theological one.
What do you mean?
Zion's not just complaining about her own suffering.
Okay.
She's saying that the enemy violated God's laws by entering the sanctuary.
So she's saying it's not just about her.
Right.
It's about a holy place being desecrated.
Exactly. An affront to God.
So then it becomes about divine justice.
Yeah.
If God is really just,
uh-huh.
will he punish the Babylonians?
Even though they won.
Yeah, especially from what they did to the sanctuary.
That question gets to the heart of the dilemma in the text.
Does it?
Yeah, it acknowledges suffering, the fact that evil seems to be winning,
right?
But it still holds on to this belief in a just God.
That's something a lot of people still struggle with today.
Absolutely.
How can a loving God let bad things happen?
Right.
Does justice really win?
Even when we can't see it.
The text doesn't give us easy answers.
No, it doesn't, but it gives us a way to think about these questions.
Yeah, it encourages us to acknowledge the complexity of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of pain.
But without forgetting that hope is still possible.
And that's what makes the Book of Lamentations so relevant today.
I agree.
Even though it was written thousands of years ago.
It still speaks to us.
It doesn't avoid those tough questions.
No, it doesn't.
It embraces the emotions that come with tragedy.
But it also hints that it's possible to move through those emotions.
Yeah.
To find meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even a little hope on the other side.
It makes you think, what are the sanctuaries in our own lives?
Ooh, that's a good one.
The places,
yeah.
The beliefs,
mm-hmm.
The relationships that we consider sacred?
That's a good question.
What happens when those are violated?
Right. How do we react?
Do we let it shatter our faith?
Yeah.
Or do we find a way to rebuild?
To reclaim what was lost.
Those are tough questions.
They are, but they're important ones.
And it seems like Lamentations might actually have some answers.
I think so. It invites us to be really honest,
mm-hmm.
to wrestle with those feelings of doubt and despair.
Yeah, but it also reminds us that we're not alone in that.
Exactly. We're all in this together.
This deep dive has been so insightful.
It has.
It's amazing how these ancient texts can still speak to us today.
Thousands of years later.
We explored how Lamentations uses this structure of a funeral lament,
right?
This heart-wrenching story of loss,
mm-hmm.
and all those vivid images and poetic techniques.
To show us the depth of despair that the people of Judah felt.
Exactly. And we talked about how it challenges that whole idea of Zion theology.
Uh-huh. Making the audience confront the fact that their beliefs were shattered.
Right. And maybe even forcing us to do the same.
To grapple with the theological implications of that kind of loss.
And we discussed that strong emphasis on communal identity.
Yes. How those losses were made even worse.
Yeah.
Because of that deep sense of solidarity in their society.
That image of Jerusalem as this lonely widow.
It's powerful, isn't it?
Strips of everything.
Her treasures, her dignity.
It's going to stick with me.
It's haunting, but it also reminds us how important it is to mourn together.
Mm-hmm.
To support each other
in times of tragedy.
It's a theme that we see over and over.
Yeah, it doesn't matter the time or the culture.
When we grieve together, we share the burden.
Right.
And maybe we even find the strength to rebuild.
You know, before we wrap up,
yeah.
I have one more question.
All right.
Does Lamentations offer any hope?
Ooh, good question.
After all that despair,
right.
What happens next?
I'd encourage you to explore that further. Dr. Allen's lecture suggests that the text does move towards hope.
It does.
Yeah, a recognition of God's love,
mm-hmm.
and the possibility of restoration.
So even in the middle of all that loss,
yes,
there's still a chance for healing.
There is for rebuilding.
For finding meaning even in the face of tragedy.
Exactly.
And what about the Babylonians?
Right, what about them?
Do they face judgment for what they did?
That's an open question. The text asks us to think about justice,
uh-huh.
and the possibility of redemption.
I love that. A little bit of mystery.
A little cliffhanger.
And a lot to think about.
It's been a great discussion.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through grief and loss in ancient Jerusalem.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you'll keep exploring the Book of Lamentations.
Yeah, see what speaks to you.
What challenges you.
And what gives you hope.
Thanks for listening.